Hello and welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Play Point podcast. This is a Washington Capitals fans podcast. And I am, as always, the blue liner on point, your host with the hockey most. God, that sounded lame. but not as lame as what's coming out of the other side. And we'll get to that in a minute. Whew! Exciting game last night, eh? Yeah, I think we're all still recovering from that. Got a lot to talk about that and the series in general, so let's just dive right in here. I'll admit I had to be talked down off of the ledge. I was going to watch this game no matter what, but yeah, I had to be talked down a bit off the ledge, which unfortunately for we Caps fans is an all too familiar place. So much so that we have it booked every April. Insert rim shot here. And yeah, you had to say there was no two ways about it. It looked bad after the first two games, especially after how everything just completely had fallen apart in game two. Game one, I think they acquitted themselves very well, just they lost focus for a total of 65 seconds or so, and it cost them. But if not for that 1 minute plus, they would have won the game. But game two, yeah, they were just awful. There were no two ways about it. After about 5 minutes into the second period, they were just awful. But I don't want to say it's neither here nor there, because it's a loss, and it was a bad loss. And it's a loss that maybe there's some good in it, in that it spurred some good things, some what's hopefully going to turn into some good habits, but it's still going to take a lot of work. Now, bottom line, yes, the Caps won last night, 2-1. Or rather, they put the series at 2-1. They won 3-2. But it took a lot to get there, and I'm hoping that the Capitals learned from that they need to trust in their own intensity. Now, before I go any further, I should mention that, once again, we are live to tape, as always. To cut down on post-production time, I'm using as little pre-recorded segments as possible. And also, I want to give the followers of the podcast, as well as members of various Caps fan groups out there, time to post and air their concerns, observations, vexations, whatever, so that I can address them. First and foremost, this is a Caps couch trip, if you will. Now, I'm not going to call it that. It's still the Power Play Point podcast, because ever since the 80s, the Caps have been built on defense and defensemen and great defensemen, and I think that should always be a hallmark of the team. That's one of the reasons why I call it that. But it's basically one big therapy session, not just for me, but for you, the Caps fan out there. And if there was ever a time that we need it, it's now, because of the yin-yang, yo-yo, up-and-down, peaks and valleys journey that has been this playoffs, and we're not even all the way through the second round yet. So I want to hear from everybody as much as I can, and not only air my concerns, but air your concerns as well. And thankfully, already have one from Mr. Robbie Gross. I've mentioned him before. He's got his own podcast, Sports on the Hill. Covers all of DC sports, Wizards, Caps, Redskins, DC United. And I'll just read his post verbatim. "I hate that Pens fans will now use this Crosby thing as an excuse. I just hope Caps don't let up and keep the same intensity." Well, I kind of mentioned that. Now, the Crosby hit, yes, that was a significant event in the game. I will tell you up front, I will not spend that much time on it. I will address it, but I will not spend all that much time on it on my show, but we will discuss it a little bit later on. So just want to put that out there. I am aware of it. We'll talk about it. We'll spend a little time on it. That's, of course, what he's referring to. But yes, Robbie has a point. The Pens fans will use this as something of a rallying cry. And let's just get that out of the way, since it's, you know, the cat's out of the bag, whatever, however you want to say it. Yes, there is an element to the Pittsburgh Penguins fan base. I don't want to paint a broad brushstroke across them, because I happen to know there are some Penguins fans that do have a brain in their head and know how to use it, and they do have a heart and a soul in them too, and they do know what's what. They're not blinded by the black and gold. They're not blinded by their own crap, their own PR. But they will use, and it's already happened. It's already happened, and that's one of the reasons why I'm not going to waste too much time on the Crosby incident. But they have it in their head that this is something. Well, there was an element. I don't want to give too much credence to it, because I think it's just a small rogue group of Penguins fans, or at least I'd like to think that way. I'd like to think most Penguins fans have, you know, some idea of what's real and what's not. But there's an element to the Penguins fans that says this may have been something of a premeditated attack, among others. And I'm here to tell you, that's bullcrap. That comes straight off the stable room floor. So again, I mentioned this in the Toronto series, and it's going to continue to a slightly smaller extent. There is going to be a lot of noise. There is going to be a lot of verbal and electronic garbage that comes out of the opposition camp. And we all know that NBC is a willing accomplice, is a more than willing accomplice. For some reason, they have married themselves to the fate of Crosby and the Penguins. Okay? I don't know what they're going to do when the day comes when Crosby retires. That's a whole other subject, by the way. I'm not even going to broach that. But the fact of the matter is that there is going to be a lot of noise. There's going to be a lot of vitriol. There's going to be a lot of spewage that is pointed in our direction. And I say our because the target is the Caps fan. The target is the spirit, the soul that keeps us going. And that's our belief that this team can win it all. And win it all legitimately. And when I say that, I mean go all the way and play at least with dignity and honor the way the game should be played. Well, there's an element to the Penguins fans groups that I would say is trying to paint not only the team, but the fan base, our fan base, as illegitimate, as something that we shouldn't even be there. We have no right to be there. Like they own the cup or something. And I'm here to say, don't listen to any of it. And that would be my answer to Robbie's post. Do not listen to any of it at all. Do not fall for this notion that just because now Crosby is injured and their players have been injured, they've dealt with this. Pittsburgh has dealt with injuries all season long. And I have been one of the few advocates for Mike Sullivan being a nominee for Jack Adams Award because he's managed to keep the team playing at a high level. I've mentioned this on the show. I've mentioned this on Facebook. Okay. Now I can't remember. Did Crosby miss some significant time? I think he did at the beginning of the season. But they have dealt with injuries off and on all year long. They just got Carl Hagelin back. They just got Chris Kunitz back. They've dealt with that thing, you know, if they're as great as they think they are, then this shouldn't be anything. This shouldn't be a game changer. Or should it? And that, I want to segue from that into one of the main topics I want to cover. Do you all think that this changes the, I'm looking for the right word here. I got so much to put out, but I kind of don't know how to put it. But does this change the, I mean, I don't want to say momentum, because momentum can be a fickle thing. Does this change the feel of the series? Does it feel like the Capitals now can go forward and play their game? Does it feel like now that they have a chance? Is, I guess, the best way I can figure out how to put it. And I don't know that it does. And the reason I say that is part of it is that what I mentioned before, that the Penguins have dealt with injuries and changes to the lineup all year long, and they've managed to stay one of the top teams in the league. So if you believe that, if you stick with that, then this really doesn't change a whole lot, or it shouldn't anyway, at least not on paper. Now, if the team, their team starts to think, oh no, our captain is gone. I mean, I don't know if they see him that way. I really don't. I don't know if they look upon him that way, that, oh no, he's gone. How will we survive now? Because when Ovechkin was hit by Kadri late in that first round series, there was a hush in the building that you could feel. There was some palpable tension, as it were, in that, oh God, no, if he doesn't come back, how are we going to win this series? How will we get by? What will we do? And to an extent, yes, you could sense that in the PPG Paints Arena after the hit, but because there was so much debate, because the NBC people had this incessant need to talk over the issue and discuss not only the legitimacy of what happened, but because it was Crosby, because they acted like, I mean, they acted like, you know, somebody had hit their child over the head with something. You know, and that's why it's a detriment what they do, how they cover the game. They don't see that. They refuse to see that. But that's how that, the, what they call passing for proper hockey coverage ruins the coverage, ruins the moment. A proper hockey crew, a proper television crew would have let the moment in some, to some extent, speak for itself. You could have heard more of the ambience in the building. But you didn't get that. You didn't get that because the NBC people just ruined it. And again, that's why everybody pans them and that they do such a bad job. You know, they couldn't just shut up and stand back and analyze the moment. They had to talk over it because, oh my God, it's Crosby. Crosby's driving the gravy train, which is also crap. But that, I just want to take a moment to take NBC to task for that, because, and I'm a little disappointed that, you know, Doc Emmerich is part of that, because I've revered him for many, many years. I'm afraid he's part of the overall mentality of the network that's just going through the motions. I don't know who's driving, you know, the decisions of that production crew, but it's dragging everybody down, even a legend like Doc Emmerich. And that's, I find that very disappointing. But moving on. And, okay, so I just got another post from my man, Kevin Simmons. I'll read it verbatim. Gil, please be sure to mention that just because Crosby and others will not be playing in Game 4, this doesn't constitute an easier contest. I keep reading posts from other Caps fans about now the Caps have an easy game. Caps need to floor it and come out guns a-blazing tomorrow night. This won't be an easy game. Far from it. Amen. Ladies and gentlemen, lest ye forget, what did I just say? The Penguins have been dealing with injuries and lineup changes all freaking year long. They are used to this. They are used to juggling lines. They're used to line matchups being changed on the fly. They're used to different personnel and working with them. Hell, the fact that Matt Murray was injured in the warm-up and had to be replaced last minute by Marc-Andre Fleury didn't rattle them and isn't going to rattle them. So anybody right now that thinks that this has made anything easier for the Capitals, think again. Right now, think again. It hasn't. The Penguins are going to find a way to steal, S-T-E-E-L, their resolve and come out this all the stronger, all the better. Did anyone bother to see how Evgeny Malkin upped his game? I'm sorry, but the man was nigh unstoppable. So he's one to watch out for. Kunitz is one to watch out for. Although, frankly, I think Crosby makes him better. I think without Crosby, I don't think Kunitz is as good. But I think he's given himself license to, especially if you saw some replays, I think you know what I'm talking about. He's given himself license to bring something more of an edge to his game. And, of course, Carl Hagelin is back, and he gave the team fits, gave the Caps fits last year. So he's another one to watch. So Kevin makes a valid point here. This is not over by any stretch. The Capitals, guess what, folks? Capitals still have to win 3 games out of the next 4, out of the remaining 4 to win. Anybody thinks this is over? It's not over. It's just beginning. I got just another one right here. Old friend of mine, Doug Lucerarian. This will be a chippy game 4. It will not be an easy game by any stretch, but if the Caps play their game for a full 60 minutes, they should come out of the game victorious and even the series up at 2-2. Very well said. If anybody with eyes or ears paid attention last night, the Capitals played, I would say, a 57-minute game and still managed to win. Actually, no, they played a 63-minute game because it took about 6 or 7 minutes of overtime. So, evidently, the overtime, they couldn't finish out the game. They couldn't close it out in the last 3 minutes, but they made up for it in the overtime. I jest a bit, of course. But, yes, Doug makes yet another valid point. No, it will not be easy. And it goes along with Kevin's point. It's not going to be easy. Anybody that thinks Pittsburgh's going to roll over is dead wrong. You can't think that. If anything, they are going to try and use this somehow to make themselves better. And I will not be surprised, like Doug said, you can't be surprised if the Penguins come out very physical, if they may not dictate the play, but they will certainly have a physical response. There will be a lot of scrums after the whistle. There will be a lot of physicality that will go over the line. I am hoping against hope that the referees assigned to the game at least try to recognize that, and instead of letting everybody play to the point where we might have another injury that is premeditated, instead of that happening, be proactive maybe and get a handle on this game and not let everybody just turn them loose and play. No, they need to control the game. And if that means they call penalties from the get-go, so be it. But I have a bad feeling that that's not going to be the case, and everything's just going to be let go, as has been the tone in these first three games. And like Doug said, it's going to be very chippy. It's going to be rough and not easy. But again, if they stick to their game, because they dominated, they did dominate the play. And what helped, third segue, what helped was the play of Braden Holtby. And I don't know if this is a joke or not. I read somewhere that, I think it was Ed Frankovic made mention of this, but Holtby actually, I don't want to cast aspersions here, but Holtby actually consulted with a sports psychologist, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know, not an official session, I don't think, just a little, brief consult maybe, and that kind of helped him a bit. But what's still bothering me about Holtby's game is that he's still being beaten mid-level to high on the glove side. If you notice the first goal that was scored by the Penguins, not the ball-busting game tire, but that first one that was scored, let me see. So the Malkin goal, Malkin assisted on the game-tying goal, but the Malkin goal, if you saw the replays, Holtby was beaten about shoulder level to the glove side. I'm no 100% expert on goaltending, but in my estimation, in my opinion, I think Holtby had his glove hand a little too low, and that's how he was beaten in game two. For that third goal, for what ended up being the game-winning goal in that game, where it looked like he should have had it, and yet he kind of looked like he was lost. And so that's why I'm still concerned about Braden Holtby. And yes, I won't deny, yes, he looked awesome last night for about 58 minutes. And yes, no, there was not anything he could do about the game-tying goal. Okay, that damn puck that was shot by Justin Schultz looked like the classic, ducks and drakes skimming stones on the, the Magathy River. Local geography, inside joke. And I don't know, you cannot defend against a crazy bounce like that. And that thing skipped along the ice, hit TJ Oshie, and just hopped over everything and then into the net. There was no way that Braden Holtby was going to stop that. So you can't really blame him for that. But like I said, that first one by Malkin, I think he could have had, because it was glove hand, it was a bit short side. I think he could have had that. Might sound a little nitpicky to you guys out there, but I'm no expert, but I've been watching goalies for over 30 years. And, I'd like to think that I know something about that kind of action, that kind of positioning. So Holtby is a very good student of the game. I think he saw that, and I think he learned. I'm hoping he learned from that a little bit. But, Malkin's got a wicked shot, and that might have gone in anyway, but I think a little bit better positioning, I think he might have at least gotten a piece of it, and it might not have even gotten to overtime, but we'll never know. But I just wanted to throw that out there about Holtby, because that is going to be, unfortunately, that's going to be the keys to the series. There's no choice here. They can't afford, they're still in a hole. They can't afford for him to have an off game again. He's got to put that behind him. And if he's got to do a consult with a sports psychologist to do that, great, so be it. I don't care. But he cannot have another bad game like he did in game two. And he cannot afford to lose focus. And he needs to relearn and study these shooters a lot more. Mitch Korn is probably the best in the game as far as preparing a goalie. So I'm sure the two of them will work together. And I, for one, have faith in that. But we've got to see the Holtby of the first 57 minutes of last night for the rest of the series. And the reason he's got to be like that is because the nature of how the Penguins play the game. If you give them the slightest opening, they will take it and not only run with it, they will leave you choking on your own dust. They are that opportunistic and that fast. They will do that. It has happened. What happened in the first three goals of game two? All three odd man rushes. All three of those first three goals, odd man rushes. Make a mistake, give an inch, they will take a marathon, not just a mile. So where the Caps defense falters, he's got to be that last line. He has got to be rock solid. And he was spot on. He was stopping everything. And again, he's got to stay at that level for the rest of this series for the Caps to have a chance. Period. So that obviously has always been a key to the team's success. Holtby has to maintain that level of play, no question. So in the meantime, I've gotten another post via Facebook from another old friend, good friend of the show, Pete Fisher. He says, keep up the energy, throw more shots on goal, especially during the power play. Okay, good. This gives me another segue to yet another topic. I'm not going to say the offense has sucked, but I do think they are wasting some chances by overthinking and overpassing. I think the second line, more than any group, has been very solid as far as production. Justin Williams is driving the play every time he touches the puck. I can take Kuznetsov's skill. I can leave his penalties. I swear to holy heaven, if he took another penalty, I was going to throw something at the TV last night, but obviously he redeemed himself with that brilliant goal outweighing Marc-Andre Fleury. But Kuznetsov has to have more consistency in his game, and he has to be willing to shoot a little more. I think the whole team has to be willing to shoot a little more. And it's feast or famine with this group. It really is. And it gets frustrating at times. They either psych themselves out of a quality scoring opportunity by overpassing, or they're not patient enough and they take shots they ought not be taking that end up either getting blocked or tipped at the last second or just plain not making the target. And they have to find that middle ground where they get to that sweet spot where it's at least going to make it to the net and perhaps maybe, you know, put Fleury in a chance where he can't trap it or control it and it gives up a nice rebound. And that's the other part of the equation, is that they've got to start putting more bodies in front, because I don't care who you are, unless you are built 4 feet high by 6 feet wide, unless your body is that shape, ain't nothing you're going to stop if you can't see that little black disc coming at you. You can't stop what you can't see. And if you got bodies in front of you, there's no way you can see it. And I just don't think They're doing enough of that. Now we're going to take a really quick trip back in time here. Yes, I'm Mr. Hockey History here. So we're gonna do it again. But the 1990 playoffs. All right. A lot of people remember that as the John Drews playoff year. And, if I remember right, some of his goals were from in close. But on top of that, that was also the year the Caps traded for and got Dino Cicerelli. And what was his specialty? Stand in front of the net, take a beating, and tip the puck in the goal at the last second. Now, I'm not saying we have to resort to doing that, and certainly I want to give credit to Alex Ovechkin for making himself available for that type of chances. I'm just saying that has to happen more. I want to see two bodies in front of Marc-Andre Fleury, because as good as his lateral movement is, again, he's not going to be able to stop anything that he can't see. It's how Henrik Lundqvist can be beaten. He can't stop what he can't see. If you screen him well enough, you'll get the rebounds. You'll get the chances. He won't be able to corral it as well as he should, which will create a rebound, which creates a scoring chance. You see where I'm going with this? Now, even more frustrating than the general offense, as Pete mentioned, is the power play. Okay, so I'm going to put this out here for debate right now. The power play isn't anywhere near as good as it could be. Yes, I know they won on a power play and a shot from the point by Kevin Shattenkirk. But if all of you saw what I saw last night, you all saw the same thing, in that the power play point shot from Kevin Shattenkirk wasn't working. So, I don't know if that, you know, fifth or sixth time was the charm, or if it was just as simple as that, or if it was just a matter of just keeping, you know, just plugging away, and then sooner or later you break through and it was the right time. I don't know which it was, but I think Coach Trotz needs to revisit the power play structure a little bit, because the point shots from Shattenkirk, most of them weren't even making it to the net. I don't know that he was just, again, if he was just trying too hard or what it was, but again, I think you've got a man up. You can afford to put another body in front of the net. I think it starts there. I think it starts with better cycling of the puck, better movement, and that's driven by Backstrom. Pittsburgh, unfortunately, you got to say, they figured out how to shut off the shooting lane in Ovechkin's quote-unquote office. So I think, unfortunately, they've made that adjustment in their favor, so they've in effect taken that away. So you have to readjust, and blasting away from the point is nice, but number one, you've got to get it on net. Number two, if you do get it on net, you have to have somebody in front to collect the rebound. And right now, the best way I can describe it is they're trying to drive a car with no wheels on it. You're directing shots from the point, and the shots aren't making on net. They're not hitting the net. And even if they are, there's nobody in front to collect the rebound. And it doesn't help that Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't give up a whole lot of rebounds. Now, this is what I'm seeing. And so I think if they're just need this, this goes back to the attitude of the team. This goes back to the killer instinct. They've got to find it within them to be more aggressive, stay more aggressive, not worry about making a mistake, and keeping up the intensity level. If you put two bodies in front of Marc-Andre Fleury, that means you want to win the game. You want to score. You want to cause problems at the very least. You want to make it as hard on them as possible. So I think in that sense, a little bit more attitude will help. But certainly they need to revisit, and I think Pete's got a good point here too. I think they need to revisit the structure of the power play, give the Penguins penalty kill more looks, and give them something to chase, give them something to adjust to. Because I think right now it's just a little bit too predictable with Shattenkirk blasting away from the point and nobody collecting a rebound. It's not working. Yeah, he's got a great shot. And yeah, by the way, Marc-Andre Fleury can be beaten. His weakness is the stick side. I've noticed on the replays of most of the goals, if you shoot at the right spot above his stick hand, he can't get to it. That's his weakness. That, I think it's the number one corner, if you think about it, the one hole. So if they keep aiming at that area, I think they've got a chance. They've got to work on that. It's something else they can work on. I hope I'm not losing everybody with the technical terms here. Anyway, I just got to... the latest posts I've gotten, might as well segue over to this point. Boy, I gotta thank all these guys that are, you know, being interactive with me here. They're driving the show, which is great. Cause, you know, I knew what I wanted to talk about, but I'm not as organized as I'd like to be. Too much life getting in the way. But anyway, got a couple friends of mine talking about, all right, so we'll get to the guts of it. This is basically, I want to talk about the reaction to the hit last night, but I'm going to spend a couple minutes on it to preface everything. Yes, we all saw the hit. We all know what happened. And before I say anything else, yes, it's awful that arguably one of the best players in the game is out, and that if it is, well, it's been officially announced that he will not be dressing for Game 4. He will at least be out for the next game. He's being reevaluated as we speak. The official diagnosis is the awful C word. I didn't get, when I saw what happened, I was trying to, again, I'm not a doctor. They just call me one on TV, wherever I go. But when I saw the hit and I saw his reaction, I tried to see what his eyes looked like, because that's one of the things that you look for when someone is concussed. Can they focus? Can they look you in the eye? Can they focus? Can they look? Can they focus their eyes on a target? And if they can't sustain focus on one fixed point with their eyes, that is supposedly a sign of a concussion, at least right off. So I've learned. And so I was trying to see into his eyes, but he was hunched over so badly and he could not even bring his head up, which told me that I was thinking, for the most part, it may not have been a concussion. If you remember his history, the collision with David Steckel at the Winter Classic, that was the first hit. And then he played a few weeks later and he was hit from behind by Victor Hedman in a game. And then that's when he missed all that time, was after that. And then, as it turned out, he was misdiagnosed. It was actually a problem with his neck, and that the team doctors had screwed that up. But unfortunately, he's been hit in the head a few times since then. So he is an at risk. He's what they call an at risk athlete as far as additional concussions, because they say it adds up over time the more punishment you take in that area of your body. And so this is yet again. So it wasn't really the big one the first time around was really his neck. So he was hunched over and he wasn't able to lift his head. So you could go either way on that. It could be his neck again, or it could be a concussion. And that's what they're diagnosing it as right now. And if they're willing to diagnose it as a concussion instead of upper body injury, you know, they're willing to say, okay, we're not going to take any chances. We're going to keep him out, at least in the short term. But that's the medical side of it. The overall contribution to the game. Yes, if you are striving for a goal, you are striving for a championship, you want to be the best in your field, and it's a competitive environment where you're going up against other elements. Now, I don't know if any of you out there are wrestling fans, but there was a wrestler by the name of Ric Flair that in his promos he liked to say, and it's oh so true, to be the man, you've got to beat the man. And so we're on the Capitals are on their way, so they want to be towards a championship, and these are the defending champions. Sidney Crosby is not only their best player, but their captain. It was bad enough that the announcement was made that Chris Letang would miss the whole playoffs, and now they're going to be without Sidney Crosby. Well, you want to say you beat the champions at their best. Well, I mean, I feel bad, but I don't feel sorry for this team because this happened during the series. Now, you could also say that Sidney Crosby's getting his just desserts because of, you know, stuff I mentioned on a previous episode, what he did. He went a little wild one week, spearing someone in the family jewels and, you know, chopping somebody else's ring finger off, or darn near. You know, evidently he had a problem with marital bliss, I think. But anyway, I jest. But in all seriousness, I mean, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go down that road. And it's obvious. You can say that. I'm not going to argue that. But I'm not going to go down. I'm not of that ilk. I'm not going to partake in that. That he's reaping what he sows. But at the same time, I'm not going to say it's not an illegitimate argument either. Make of that what you will. And not only did they lose Crosby last night, they also lost Connor Sheary due to Patrick Hornquist running into his own man. A nice avoidance move by Lars Eller. And so Sheary was also diagnosed with a concussion as well. But that all is my reaction to it. I was going to make something of a humorous take on Connor Sheary's hit, but I'm going to go away from that. I mean, there's jokes that could be made, but it's never funny when somebody gets hurt. So I'm going to dispense with that part of it. Now, what's really not funny though is again, this element of the Pittsburgh fan base that thinks that this is something premeditated, something that's in the habitual culture of the Capitals team, that's ludicrous. And I think the worst example, and I don't know, I don't call myself a journalist by any stretch. This is a podcast. This is a fan-made podcast, and it's for the fans by a fan. I don't proclaim myself to be a journalist by any stretch. However, there was a so-called journalist who took it upon himself to act like nothing more than a Penguins fanboy, and I will not mention him by name. I will not glorify his stupidity, and basically tried to take Coach Trotz to task about the Niskanen-Crosby incident, and I think Coach Trotz handled himself rather well. He sparred with him and said, look, hey, this other stuff happened too. What do you think of that? Put the chump in his place, and there were calls to revoke this guy's media credential for Game 5. I think that would be appropriate, because if you represent yourself as a member of the media, you're right away you you can represent the slant of the team, but you can't be an all-out fanboy and try to represent your home team. And from what I've heard, this particular person, that's all they ever do. So that to me, again, I'm no journalistic expert. I don't have a degree in that. That's not my area of expertise, but seems obvious to me that if you're a journalist, you are tasked with covering the event from a neutral perspective. And that's not what this guy was doing. So that's all the time I'm going to spend on that. All right. So I indulge me if you could. I'm going to recheck my Twitter feed once more and my Facebook feed for any more items. Okay. So not for filler purposes, but because I think this is relevant, let's take a look at the main numbers for last night's game. Final totals, 33 shots on goal for the Capitals versus 30 for the Penguins. Face-off win percentage, Pittsburgh had a slight edge. Power plays, Caps converted 2 of 5, Pittsburgh none of 5. Penalty minutes, 9 more to the bad for Washington. Pittsburgh slightly out-hit, 36 to 31 for them. Blocked shots, again, Pittsburgh continues to play that game, and while it bears fruit, I think this may be the most telling statistic of all, out blocking shots 18 to 14. But again, as was pointed out by Ed Frankovic, it is a game of attrition. When you do that, you expose your players to possible injury. And Patrick Hornquist certainly was victimized by that. And he may have been a step slow, which ultimately may have cost them Connor Sheary as well because of that. Let's see. So the next category is giveaways. Much better for the Capitals on that one. 4 versus 12 for the Penguins. Takeaways 4 to 3, edge Penguins. Shots by period. This is something else I want to talk about. What I don't understand what happens to this team in the second period, because by far, in every single game in this series, the second period has been an abomination. It has been awful for this team. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the long change or what. I just don't get it. But in every single game in this series so far, the second period has been, without a doubt, the worst. And the most telling statistic is the shots on goal. Pittsburgh outshot Washington 15-11 in the second period. Capitals regained the advantage in third period. Capitals were clearly the better team in the third period up until they pulled Fleury. And, of course, 2-1 shots-wise in the overtime period. And the best play of the game, and I will praise this guy up one side and down the other, Marcus Johansson driving to the net, hauled down by Trevor Daley, to draw the penalty. What do I keep saying? When Marcus Johansson causes problems in and around the net and along the boards, good things happen. And yet again, he did it. And who, by the way, who got the assist on Kuznetsov's goal in the third? Marcus Johansson. And he doesn't make the three stars, but he's a key element to the Caps offense. So if he keeps on doing what he's been doing, I don't think they can lose. And there's another example of something he does that doesn't quite make the score sheet, but makes things happen. He draws the penalty, and then 60 seconds later, game over. Now, the three stars of the game were, of course, Shattenkirk, Nicklas Backstrom, and Evgeny Malkin. So moving on from that, obviously, Niskanen has, it's been decided that he's not going to face supplementary discipline. I thought the penalty on the ice was more than sufficient. I think at best, it should have been a 4-minute double minor. I don't think it should have been a major that kicked him out of the game. And should he find himself in a situation where he's facing perhaps a suspension because of too many match penalties, I think that one ought to be rescinded if it comes to that. I don't think it'll come to that because Niskanen isn't prone to that kind of thing. All I got to do is look at his track record. But the idiot zebras on the ice decided to call that penalty, which I thought was more than enough. And so lost him for the balance of the game, but no supplementary discipline, thank goodness. Now, you'll also notice, most of you probably noticed, that the Caps went with 7D and 11 forwards. I don't see why that should not continue, assuming everybody's going to come back. I thought Carl Alsner added an element of stability, and I'm not going to back down from that. I don't think, obviously he was hurt, so they had to pull him back. I still have a few lingering doubts about Schmidt. I thought he looked weak at times in front of the net. I don't see where Schmidt can be much more of a contributor to than, say, the offensive rush. So I don't trust his minutes as far as that goes. So I think we need to keep, I don't think anybody should sit at this point. I think we need to keep this element. The fourth line shouldn't really be a line. I think at this point, let it just stay Tom Wilson and Jay Beagle. Throw Beagle in and out on an important faceoff. Throw Tom Wilson in for a little bit of energy to spell off one of the forwards every now and then and use that line that way. I hate to say it, but Brett Conley unfortunately hasn't made much of a difference. I don't see where inserting Paul Carey into the lineup made much of a difference. So I say leave that spot open. Leave this configuration. It obviously worked. And it was fortunate that they had that given what happened to Niskanen. But it obviously worked in that the D was more of a presence despite Shattenkirk's foibles. So we're going to end the show with the last topic. I'm sorry this is running a little long. We'll make this a special edition. But I wanted to end the show the way the game ended last night with all eyes on Kevin Shattenkirk. Yes, he has been much maligned this playoffs and this series, and with good reason. All you got to do is look at his plus-minus stat. I think he started last night's game a -7, and frankly, he just did not look much better for the most part last night. The best you could say about him is that he was less prone to mistakes, less inept at both ends of the ice. He had an okay game. Well, we didn't trade for the guy to, we didn't trade for an okay defenseman. We traded for a number one pairing defenseman, a high caliber defenseman. That's who Brian McClellan supposedly traded for. Now, the debate, so to me, the jury is still out. Has Shattenkirk's game returned? I don't know. We're not gonna know until I would say the first 7 or 8 minutes of game 4 tomorrow night. It's going to be hard to say. Are we going to see the same guy that led the rush and got 10 points in 10 games? Or are we going to see the guy that has been clumsy with the puck and has made really bad decisions the first 6 or 7 games plus of the playoffs? I don't know. It's down to him. I'm not making a decision, but last night was certainly a good sign. I think he started to come out of his funk a little bit. He didn't play horribly the whole game. He made some questionable decisions with the puck, but I think his game got a little bit better. And of course, scoring the winning goal certainly doesn't hurt. It's probably giving him a ton of confidence right now that he desperately needed. So we'll see. We'll see. So I'm not willing to say, some of you out there may be, but I'm not. I'm not willing to say whether or not the Shattenkirk that we saw during the regular season is back. It's going to take, like I said, the first 7 or 8 minutes of this next game coming up. And if you're wondering, yes, I'm probably going to be doing the Squidward thing of the Band Geeks again by watching this. And if you know what I mean, it's the episode where he hires the citizens of Bikini Bottom to form a band to impress his old friend from high school. But they're so awful, and they get the gig anyway, but they're so awful that he's at the bandstand conducting, and he has to avert his eyes. He's got the baton, but he's looking away, and he's hoping against hope, for a miracle, and he gets that miracle. And those of you listening right now who have absolutely no freaking clue what I'm talking about the song by David Glenn Isley, Sweet Victory, that gets played in that episode that comes out of SpongeBob's mouth. And you can't help but think that might have been what's going through Shattenkirk's mind, and certainly all of our minds, because, yeah, it didn't look good those last 2 minutes. And it was another time, a moment in time where you thought, my God, how much suffering is it that we have to go through as Caps fans? And yet, once again, the team prevailed. And it's this kind of a thing that happens and has happened all year long that gets you to think, maybe, just maybe, this is the year that, at the very least, we finally get past this team. And again, I know it looks like it's an easier path without Crosby. And certainly, if you take away what many consider to be the best in the game on the planet, it takes away a lot from that team. But individual players don't win Stanley Cups. They might win Hart trophies and Pearson trophies and Ted Lindsay awards and whatnot, but teams win Stanley Cups. And so the Capitals need, in the end and now, from now till it's all over, they need to continue to be the better team. No, it's not easy to translate regular season success, okay, into playoff success, because 82 games of a regular season only determine who has the right to play for Lord Stanley's Cup. Other than that, it means nothing. I will say this to my dying day. Have you ever seen the President's Trophy? That thing looks like it will fall apart if you look at it cross-eyed. Now, I'd still rather win that over that stupid world cash grab trophy that they duct taped together out of glass flutes from lectors. Okay. But it still, in the end, doesn't mean doodly beans. Doesn't mean the biggest pile of horse dung you can collect. You don't get your name on the thing. The whole team gets $500,000, whoop-de-doo. But it doesn't mean anything. I'm going to dry this point home until it's a stake buried 6 feet under. You are immortalized when you win the Stanley Cup. Doesn't matter if you win one or if you win 16. You are immortalized. Your name goes on the damn thing. You are remembered for life as a Stanley Cup champion. If this team isn't hungry for it now, then I don't know when or what will make them hungry. But they have to continue to play like that is the prize that is right in front of them, so close they can touch the damn thing. Okay? That is what they have to keep in mind. And when my friends say, keep the intensity up, keep the foot on the gas, that is what we mean. Ladies and gentlemen, Caps fans around the world, this isn't over yet. There are 3 games that have to be won just to get to the next round, just to get to the conference final, just to get halfway to the promised land. And folks, if I sound like I'm doing a bit of preaching here, I'm sorry, but it is something in my genes a little bit. That being my father's brother, God rest your wonderful soul, Uncle Jim, amen. Settle for a nephew of a preacher man. But I can't help it. And if we have the will to stomach what was the worst, craziest yin-yang up-and-down game I have ever seen, and that's saying something, in 40 frickin' years of watching Stanley Cup playoffs, that had to be the craziest I ever saw. You know, I don't think the WWE could have scripted anything like that. But if we as Caps fans are able to stomach something like that, surely we can help will this team on to victory. And that's what I'm calling on everybody to do. And I'm calling on the team to use this as a source of strength. Get the enemy to wonder what the hell it's going to take to finally kill this team. What is it going to take to finally get past them? And is the cost going to be too high? Get them thinking that. Make of that what you will. I will be watching Game 4 tomorrow night, eyes wide open. And if all goes well, Mrs. Blue Liner at my side on the couch. And I'm hoping for the best. And I'm knowing that they better come out guns a-blazing, just like my friend said. No loss of intensity. Now is the time to go for the kill. Now is the time to finish them off. It can happen. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to take all their effort. And with that, I say, once again, let's go Caps.